Yo, Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain. Great questions from freedomain.locals.com and also Facebook. So here we go. Hi, Steph. Wondering if you could give me some insight on raising my sons. I have two sons, 12 and 13. The 13-year-old is autistic. When the boys were much younger, and if I was out with them at the zoo or park or something, my 13-year-old would at times be overstimulated from the environment. And because it was the three of us and their mother was not around, we often would have to suspend the activity because my 13-year-old would be having meltdowns and so on. So his younger brother oftentimes would have to defer to his brother. I noticed this trend and made an effort to make sure that my youngest son would not always have to defer and make sacrifices. I have noticed lately that my youngest son does care for his brother, but definitely wants to have his own space and be his own person, and does not want to be responsible for his brother, which is understandable. My question is, I know that I am the parent, and it is my responsibility to take care and raise my sons, but is there any responsibility for siblings to take care of siblings? One day the parents will be gone. How much responsibility will they have for each other? And what kind of influence and emphasis should I place on that? If any, should there be... Should there be now as my sons are growing up? One day the parents will be gone. How much responsibility will they have for each other? And what sort of influence and emphasis should I place on that, if any? Should there be now as my sons are growing up? It kind of went off the rails at the end there. So the first thing that I do with regards to family matters, this is not, of course, the only thing, but the first thing that I do with regards to family matters is I look at the question of the genetics of the situation. So moral bonds are one thing. My wife is virtuous, my friends are virtuous, I am fairly virtuous. So there's the bonds sort of based on virtue. Now, family bonds are not primarily based on virtue, right? Because, I feel like that's almost like a controversial statement, but let me sort of see if I can tell you what I'm thinking and why. So family bonds are based on genetic proximity and reproduction, right? So the pair bonding, why you care about your own children more than a stranger's children, is because of that sort of pair bonding and the genetic preference that you would have for your own offspring. Now, of course, this is not to say that family relations do not exist based upon virtue. They certainly can. But the primary relationship is based upon genetic preference and proximity. So ducklings follow their mother. The mother bear cares for her own offspring and so on, right? So there is sort of genetic preference and genetic proximity. And that's the essence and the basis of family bonds. And again, we obviously want to add as much virtue as humanly possible to that to make it a truly virtuous relationship. But it's based upon genetic proximity and genetic similarity, a preference, right? If that makes sense. Now, with regards to siblings, so why do siblings, and I'm not saying this is true for your family, but half of sibling relationships are categorized as abusive even by the fairly loosey-goosey standards of the present. So the reason why brothers have, or siblings have a sort of unique bond is because there is a genetic proximity and a genetic proximity preference for the siblings and their children, right? Because you have a relationship to your brother or sister's children that is not just moral or virtuous, but it's genetic. And that genetic proximity preference is the foundation of that bond, right? Which is to say, the genes that favored the closest genes are the ones that survived the best, the most, and the longest, right? Genes that had no inbuilt preference for their own genetic similarity, did not reproduce like with like, did not choose their own. Like, if you have a parent who has, for whatever reason, no preference for his or her own children versus a stranger's children, then that would reduce the survivability of his or her own children. And therefore, there is a survivability metric that is very positive with regards to genetic similarity preference, right? So siblings have a bond with each other in terms of evolution, because your brother's children have more in common with you genetically than some stranger or some second cousin's children or whatever it is, right? So that basis for sibling in-group preference is based upon reproduction. Now, I think the big question is going to be, is your older child, the autistic child, is that child going to reproduce? Is that child going to reproduce? Now, if your child does not reproduce, your oldest child, for reasons that I'm certainly no expert on autism, of course, or anything like that, but if your oldest child is not going to reproduce, then there will not be as strong a desire to take care of the older sibling from the younger sibling, because it will not be aiding in reproduction. Now, please understand, I'm not saying that this is the only factor. I'm talking about the sort of the elemental root of why these family, in-group family preferences exist at all, right? And they exist at an emotional biochemical level with, you know, dopamine, oxytocin, and so on, right? So they exist at a sort of in-group genetic level. And so that's not all there is, but that's where I sort of would start with this sort of stuff. The other question is, we want to favor built-in biologically. We want to favor genetic proximity. So you have to look at it, I think, again, it's not the only thing, but where you would start looking at it, it's far from the only thing, but where you'd start looking at it is you would say, with regards to your youngest son, will caring for his older brother increase his chances of reproduction? Because the genes are the genes. It's not the only factor, and sometimes, of course, we act against them, but it is the foundation of why we have the preferences and emotions and passions that we have with regards to this kind of stuff. So if you look at your youngest son, the 12-year-old, and you'd say, okay, so let's say that he works full-time to take care of his older brother, right? The older brother that he did not choose to have, that he did not choose to grow up with, that's a choice that you and your wife made, not the choice that your youngest child make, right? So you would look at it and say, does caring for his older brother as he goes through the course of his life increase or decrease his chances of marital success, of parenting success, of reproductive success? And it's a challenging question. I don't know the answer to that because, you know, I don't know you guys as an individual family. So on the one hand, if he were to say, I don't want to have anything to do with my brother. It's too much work. I'm not a specialist. I'm not an expert. I've got my own life to live. I can't go around burdened by this and so on, right? Well, then, of course, it would be up to you and your wife to find some, as you aged, right, decades and decades from now, as you aged, you would have to find some place that would take care of the autistic child if, you know, when he grew up, he was not self-sufficient in some way or another, right? Now, if he was dating your youngest, he was dating and some woman said, oh, do you have any siblings, right? And he said, yes, I have an autistic sibling. And she were to say, oh, do you spend a lot of time taking care of him, right? As he gets older, right? And you guys are out of the picture for some reason. And if he says, no, I don't have anything to do with him. I don't take care of him at all. Some women might be a little, you know, nonplussed by that and have some questions. And they would be important questions, right? On the other hand, if he were to say, yes, you know, 3/4 of my salary and 90% of my free time goes towards taking care of my autistic brother, I mean, we might admire that at an abstract level, but a woman would say there's not enough resources left over for you to provide for your family, right? So if there's no help, no caring, I mean, I guess you could hide his brother's existence completely, but that might be a little odd. But if there's no caring, no investment, then she might be like, he's kind of cold, right? If something goes wrong and I'm going to be tossed out like last week's newsletter, right? So there's going to probably be some happy medium. But primarily and fundamentally, it is not your youngest child's responsibility to take care of the child that you and your wife chose to have. That is your responsibility. And if for whatever reason, and of course, and I hope this is not the case, and with great sympathy to everyone in the family, if it is the case that your eldest child cannot live independently, hoping, you know, crossing your fingers that the youngest child would give up his own family to a large degree, his own reproductive success, the kind of quality of woman that he might be able to get if he wasn't spending a lot of time, energy, money, and resources taking care of his elder sibling, then that is a blood lineage dead end. And blood lineage dead ends, again, you can make all of these choices. I'm just talking about like how we work really, really deep down in our DNA and in our gut. So if your youngest son can't get married and have kids because he's taking care of his older brother who can't get married and have kids because he's autistic. And again, I don't know how autistic he is, but it sounds fairly bad if he's having these kinds of, or fairly strong if he's having these meltdowns at the zoo. So that's the end of your line, right? That's the end of your blood lineage. Like 4 billion years of evolution ends with you because your younger brother gives up having a family to take care of his older brother who can't have a family, and that's it. That's it. So it's hard to say. I mean, if I were in your shoes, I say this with all, you know, humility, and obviously this is very much outside of my area of expertise, but I would be like, no, you to the youngest, right? You did not choose to have a child. That's your mother and I's choice. It's our responsibility. Now, of course, whatever you want to do, obviously not going to stop you, and it is our hope that there will be something of value in that for you. But you cannot give up your own life to take care of the child that you did not choose to have. That your focus in life is to find a great woman to marry, to be a great father yourself. And maybe that involves having some involvement with your brother. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. We'll have to see how this plays out. But your fundamental responsibility is to yourself, your wife, and your future children. It is not to the child that you never chose to have in your life, which your mother and I chose to have and keep. So I would focus on that. All right. Where can I find and access all your Truth About videos, and why don't you make more? The world needs you in that capacity. No, the world doesn't. I'm sorry, the world does not at all need me in that capacity. You may prefer me in that capacity, but the world does not need me in that capacity. I refer you back to a time a little over 4 years ago when I was deplatformed, and approximately 95 to 97% of my audience did not follow me to the new platforms, right? Immensely liberating. I don't mind it at all. I'm actually thankful that they didn't, because that was kind of an edgy game that I was playing there, poking all of the taboo hornet's nests on the planet. So no, the world does not need me in that capacity. If the world needed me in that capacity, it would have gone one website over. Right? Oh no, he's gone from YouTube. Because I see this all the time. Yesterday, for the first time ever, I did a search for my name on Twitter. And saw what people are saying, and that's nice to see. I'm still relevant and so on. But, you know, a significant amount of the comments were, hey, whatever happened to that guy? Is he gone? Did he go ruche? Like, where did he go? What did, you know, they don't bother to search. They don't bother to, right? So the world did not at all need me in that capacity. I was entertaining and, I guess, informative and instructive while I was right there in front of people. But then when I moved one website over, and it was approximately 5 to 10 seconds to type in a new website, maybe 30 seconds to create an account and be notified of every time I posted a new video. And I say this because, you know, I mean, if I did a video with less than 100,000 views on YouTube, that was considered a significant failure, and I get a couple of thou on the new platforms. And so, yeah, 95, 97% of my audience did not want to go one website over. So I'm absolutely not needed in that category, right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Like, if there's a restaurant and you love the restaurant, right? And then the restaurant moves one building over, and then like 95, 97% of the audience won't go one building over. And everyone's like, man, I love your food. I'd do anything. Get your food. Was the greatest. Was the best. Like, you know, instead of 997 Main Street, I'm now 999 Main Street. I'm literally one building over. And people are like, oh, well, that's like, what is that? That's like an extra 20 steps. Oh, man. I mean, let's be reasonable here. I mean, your food was good. I loved your food. It's the greatest food around, but 20 more steps? And you understand, that's why deplatforming works. Deplatforming works because people won't go one website over, right? And the people who did the deplatforming understood that a lot better, right? So I was like, we're in a battle against evil and we're promoting virtue and we're a team and, hey, where'd everyone go? What? Right? So the people who deplatform very much understand out of sight, out of mind, right? This is the greatest toy ever. This is the greatest thing. And then it's gone and people are like, oh yeah, I used to love that toy, right? So this is out of sight, out of mind. Deplatforming works because people don't pair bond, right? People, they don't pair bond. This is the daycare generation. This is the social media generation. They don't eye contact and pair bond with people. And so out of sight, out of mind is what is that? So, all right. A while ago, you had this fantastic video on YouTube that was called Death by Heroism. It's no longer available. I've not been able to find it since. Is there any way I can access to see and share this video? I will look into that. What are your thoughts on meditation? Do you, or have you ever practiced it? Any thoughts on Buddhism in general? Well, for my thoughts on Buddhism, donate at freedomain.com/donate or join the community at freedomain.locals.com or subscribestar.com/freedomain. You get a whole show, whole lengthy show on Buddha and Buddhism. Yeah, I like meditation. I did it for a while. And then I didn't need to do it anymore because meditation in terms of the deep connection with the self happens in my call-in shows, happens in conversations with my wife, happens through parenting, and happens through these kinds of conversations, answering these kinds of questions. So I don't do it anymore. Do you think that Ayn Rand's lack of knowledge about evolution had any bearing on her rejection of Nietzsche's allusions to psychological determinism? If you can tell me how answering that question is going to benefit the world, I would be very happy to answer it, but I don't really see what the purpose of that question is or what that would matter. Plus, you're asking me to mind read the single-lunged, smoky Russian goddess's thoughts from decades ago, and she's been dead for 40 years or whatever, right? So I can't mind read or imagine what her thoughts were regarding all of this. So. Somebody says, I am a car dealership in Anchorage, Alaska. I think that means I work at, all right? Most people don't qualify for prime lending and end up paying over 22 to 25%. Customer will not have a vehicle for work and family otherwise. Is this immoral for banks to charge and dealerships to sell at this APR? I have my opinion. I just wanted to hear from the Stefan Molyneux. Well, this is all nonsense, right? So, risk analysis was the foundation of capitalism, right? So once math and statistical analysis was invented, then people could figure out risks. So one of the reasons why there were these transatlantic voyages and all of this exploration was because people wanted insurance and people figured out how much they needed to charge based upon the risk of failure or wreckage of these ships. So civilization works on being able to have rational discrimination, right? So like, life insurance is cheaper for women in many cases. It's cheaper for non-smokers, of course. It's cheaper for people who don't have extreme sports because they want to make rational determinations of who's higher or lower risk. And so one of the reasons why this is so high is that banks aren't allowed to look at general patterns of borrowing money and paying it back and make their decisions based upon that, for reasons that we all know about, and I talked about years ago with regards to the 07-08 financial crash and what's going on right now. So banks have to charge what makes the money, and because they're not allowed to say low to many high-risk customers, they then have to spread that risk to everyone, and it's just another subsidy. So, are you ever coming to Eastern Europe, Steph? I want to buy you a beer. Grateful for all the great content, especially before the censorship started. I guess he's saying that I was better years ago. Well, I mean, I personally like the work that I'm doing right now, but I'm not you, so. It's funny. I don't know if people know how it lands. I mean, I'm not insulted or even offended. I'm just doing the work that works for me. And I have a dance with my unconscious. I have a dance with the sort of deep brain and the instincts and all of that. I can't force my philosophy brain to do anything. I really can't. And so I have to sort of follow the inspiration that's going on. If you prefer the work that I did before I was deplatformed, I understand that. I have to do a dance. I have to do a dance with my unconscious to make sure that the creativity and fertility of my mind still works. And it doesn't work when I will it. I have to kind of do a dance. I can guide it a little, but it guides me as well. It's like riding a crazy, unruly horse. Only sometimes does it go roughly in the direction you want it to go, but sometimes you just have to hang on. as a whole. So, but yeah, I'd love to come to Eastern Europe. Will there be any more truth about videos? Yeah, probably. Are you back on Twitter? No. Well, I am back on Twitter. And just so you understand, if let's say that you love your wife, you put years and years and years into making your wife happy, and you give your heart to her, and you pour everything you have into her, and then you wake up one morning, and she has set fire to your car, punched out all the windows in your house, and left you a threat of some kind, and then spends years dragging you through a court because she claims that you did something terrible that you never did, right? She claims that you did something illegal or terrible or bad that you never did, right? And, you know, you find a way to live with all of that, you get through it and so on, you get your life sorted out. And then afterwards, you hear through the grapevine that she'll take you back. Right? Would you go back? Would you be like, that sounds great. Let me get involved in this again. It's like, no. She found Jesus and she just, you know, she doesn't actually phone you and apologize or anything. She doesn't say, you know, boy, I'd love to pay you back some of that money. I've got to do what I can to clean up your reputation because the things I accused you of were just terrible and they were false. And right. She's just like, yeah, you know, you can tell him I'll take him back. Would you be like, oh, I can't wait? No, well, that's me with social media platforms, right? I mean, I was banned. I was things that were said about me that were not true. I'm not talking about any social media platform in particular, but just my general experience of it. And so, yeah, I would require some apologies and restitution before even thinking about it. I'd like to find your video, The Truth About the Native American Genocide. Yes, thank you. I just reposted that. But FDR Podcasts is where you want to go. Go to FDR Podcasts. Do your search down below. If there's videos, it will be there. All right. And I remastered it and put a transcript to it, and it's out there for donors. Hi, Steph. I have a question about something you discussed on a recent podcast that very much relates to a problem I'm currently going through. You recently said that it's perfectly fine to hide your past sexual history from your partner. Oh, my gosh. What people hear? No, if it's relevant, if it matters, if it has an impact on your pair bonding, obviously you have an STD or some indications of infertility, or if you have some massive trauma, or like then you absolutely need to talk about it. But what I'm saying is you don't have to go into every detail about everything in your past with your new partner. Right? It's okay to have some privacy. It's okay to have some things that you keep to yourself, right? You wouldn't want to go through all of your previous girlfriends and with some woman you were dating, right? Let's just go first date and you have a list of all your previous girlfriends and you say, well, this girlfriend was into this wild kink and this girlfriend really loved this and this girlfriend would not let me do this and this, like on your first date. It's like, hey man, I'm just being honest. It's like, but nobody will date you, right? Somebody says, I'm 26, single, no kids and have slept with at least 50 men that I can remember. Possibly a lot more, as many were drunk hookups that I don't remember, and also have done OnlyFans-type material. I wonder if it's really morally right to not disclose this to a man who might be my future husband. Although I've put this life behind me, I feel that many good men would be repulsed by this behavior and would never date me and would not want me to raise his kids, if not for this lie of omission. Is it really okay to hide this from a man if he asks about my past? Recently, I've had dates with guys who've asked me about how many people I've been with. Intellectually, I understand the argument you make about not revealing this, but is it really right? I mean, I'm sure that the average quality guy out there wouldn't expect my kind of past, and by not talking about it, it feels like I'm lying. Right. I mean, I'm really, really sorry for the childhood trauma that you went through that had you take on this kind of life. I really do apologize for humanity as a whole for all of that. And, you know, seriously, call in at freedomain.com. We'd probably have a good conversation about this. So I never said it was perfectly fine to hide your past sexual history from your partner. I never said that. I never said that any of that. But so if a man asks how many men you've been with, well, that's different. If you're asked directly, right? I'm talking about volunteering things of detail where it doesn't have any particular relevance on the present, right? It's the old thing about, you know, the sort of meme, if you go on a date with a girlfriend and she complains about her ex-boyfriend for an hour, it's like, well, all of that's true. but it's a turnoff because she's clearly still wrapped into this, right? So, with regards to you being 26, you've slept with, you know, 50 plus men, right? Drunk hookups you don't remember. Okay, so that's going to give you some emotional damage, which obviously results from emotional damage that you had as a child. And you also have a pornographic or semi-pornographic material through OnlyFans out on the internet, right? You say, I put this life behind me, but you can't, because it's part of what's happened to you with regards to pair bonding. It is going to have an effect. Statistically, it's going to have an effect on your current or future partner. The man needs to know this, because you're going to have a reputation. There are going to be many men who know about this history, and your sexually explicit material is going to be out there forever. And so he needs to make that decision, right? He needs to make that decision before he chooses to marry and have kids with you, because he's choosing for his future kids, right? So, no, if a man asks, you tell the truth. Now, I'm not sure if you go, I mean, I don't know what the etiquette is these days. But yeah, if he says, how many people have you been with, then you can tell him 50 plus, or you can say, it's been a lot, I had a promiscuous past, but here's what I've done to deal with it. I've gone to therapy, I do meditation, I've confronted my family, I've got the bad people out of my life, I don't drink anymore, like all of these things, right? Now, with regards to the OnlyFans material, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a deal breaker for most men. Again, I'm sorry to be so blunt, but that is, because the idea that there's sexually explicit material of the mother of his children out there floating in the digital realm, you know, especially we men, we tend to think a lot down the future. You say, oh, well, but I've closed the account and it's like, it's somewhere. It's somewhere. And it could be uploaded at any time. You say, oh, but it was a long time ago. And it's like, yes, but who knows what technology is going to be down the road? Like, it could be that there's a photo, even if you've gained weight and aged, that it's going to find some way to figure out your bone structure and then go and look everywhere on the internet, and there's going to be reverse image lookups and so on, and this stuff is going to be found. So that is material to a man committing to you. So that is not something that you can withhold and be moral. So, I mean, to take an extreme example, right? If you were convicted of some terrible crime, then you'd need to talk about that, right? Because there would be an impact on present and future life, right? So, yeah. And again, I'm very sorry about the past that led you to that. And I'm sorry about the drinking and the addiction and so on. But if you've been with a lot of men, it's not just like this sort of miles of penis that men think about, but it's also just that you would have a particular kind of reputation that is going to lower his status with regards to what he's going to be doing in the future, right? So let's say he's at a law firm and he goes for partner, and the partners find out that you had this wild, promiscuous past, then he may not get the promotion, right? Because that's also leverage, right? If there's a very salacious past or a very promiscuous past, and in particular with videos and photos and so on, right? Then the man is also going to be concerned that if he becomes very successful, which is probably the kind of person that you want to date, if he's going to become very successful, then the problem of blackmail exists, right? That somebody's going to find this and his whole life is going to be thrown into chaos and he's going to lose a lot of money and stress and all of that. So yeah, it is relevant to the man's decision. And yeah, I mean, you have to. I think you have to say that. All right. The truth about Donald Trump, it was actually called The Untruths About Donald Trump, is what got me into watching your stuff. And I really enjoyed that kind of video. I never really thought about things philosophically until watching your show. I really enjoyed the political aspect of your show and kind of wish you'd go back to doing more of that. But that's your call. Obviously, have you tried going back onto YouTube, or did they burn that bridge with you? No, I don't think I'm going back on YouTube. Well, I mean, this is the funny thing, you know, and this is just part of leadership. This is sort of what I'm trying to teach people, right? So if you want me to go back into doing that kind of stuff, writing to me and telling me you'd like me to is not taking any kind of leadership role. And I really want you guys to take leadership roles in your world, like in your society, in your life, right? So if you wanted to get me back into doing that kind of work, truth abouts or whatever it is, then what you would do, of course, is you get a donation drive going. You would, or you would get some kind of a petition going, and you would get a whole bunch of commitments to, from people to say, "I will stop watching you if you do," like all of this kind of stuff, as opposed to just whining is not planning, right? And I get all of these messages all the time of like, "Man, I really miss that you used to do this kind of stuff, and you don't do it anymore. And why don't you do?" It's like, then make it happen, right? Whining to me and complaining to me that I don't do the kind of work that you want me to do is not taking any kind of, it's not about me, it's about your life as a whole. Just take a leadership position in your life as a whole, that if you want something, find a way to make it happen. And just appealing to me or complaining to me or whining to me or wanting me to do something, it's like, the deplatforming, I mean, I dropped politics partly because it's just boring and all of that. And also, I mean, there was certain risk involved, and the cost benefit became different, right? So it's one thing to come up with edgy, risky stuff for like, I don't know, 10 million downloads a month. It's quite another thing for a couple of thousand views. Right, so it changes the cost benefit calculation, obviously, right? So, I mean, great risk, great reward is fine. But if the reward goes down, generally the risk is going to go down, right? This is risky versus conservative investments, you know, IBM versus penny stocks. You know, I don't need to explain this stuff to you, I'm sure. So if you want me to change my approach, you need to change the calibration of risks and benefits. So just, I don't know, it's just weird to me to just write. Like, you understand, the leadership thing would be to say, you know, okay, Steph, if I can get 100,000 people to sign a petition saying they'll watch your videos, will you consider doing truth about videos again? It's like, okay, that would be interesting. Or say, rather than saying, you know, I want you to, and then just being kind of passive and Napoleon Dynamite, and it's like, I just really want you to do this. You don't do that. I want you to go back on Twitter. I want you to, it's like, make it happen. Convince me. Don't just complain. Anyway, thank you for introducing me to Dr. Gabor Maté years ago. Changed my life 100%. Yes, I am half and half about that guy, but he's done some great work. Do you believe a truly free society is even possible at this point? The vast majority is so far leaning towards collectivist ideology. Feels like individualism is all but dead. I don't know what you mean by at this point. Certainly not in my lifetime, I doubt in my daughter's lifetime, but in a couple of generations, if we focus on peaceful parenting, it is certainly possible. How many children do you have? You mean directly that I know of? I have one child, and I guess like goodbye, Mr. Chips. I have countless children. Because of the people I've encouraged to have children, explicitly or implicitly. All right. Are you banned on Twitter? I am not banned on Twitter. Is real estate or are mutual funds a better investment for the future? Don't answer financial questions. Why aren't you Catholic, Stefan Molyneux? Listen to my recent show on my relationship to atheism. I've lived in 9 different countries. Why do different cultures treat dogs so differently? More than any other animal, dogs are either reviled or and eaten or treated like progeny. Well, dogs were domesticated from wolves, which is actually pretty simple to do. You just get a bunch of wolves in an enclosure and you don't allow those wolves to reproduce who are aggressive, and you only allow those wolves to reproduce who are peaceful. And then within a couple of generations, you get dogs. So if dogs are necessary for your survival, which tends to be a sort of herding Northern European kind of thing, then you will revere dogs. If dogs are not essential to your survival, then you will despise dogs, because the problem with dogs and cats is that if they're not necessary to your survival, they lower your birth rate. Because of, well, for cats, sometimes the toxoplasmosis lowers, in particular, women's ability to sense danger. But also because pets can be such a substitute for children, that women who are unable to pair bond with humans end up pair bonding with animals, the birth rate collapses. Future of AI and government jobs. I mean, clerical jobs are going to, they're going to go by the wayside, right? I mean, I get these emails from people who were like, hey, I was listening to your show X, Y, and Z, where you talked about this, that, and the other. And based upon this, you should do an interview with this author or this thinker or this guy or whatever, right? And I mean, I know they're just AI. They're just AI. AI is listening to my podcast and AI is generating these queries. And it seems very nice and personal, but you can get this generic NPC AI talk. And so, yeah, the clerical stuff is definitely going to be replaced by AI, but not so much in government, right? Because in government, it's very hard to fire people. And so the government does not have the same incentive to get rid of people who are very expensive, right? In fact, in government, it's to your advantage to keep and expand your payroll. Because governments, I mean, I worked in government once or twice, and with governments, if you come in under budget, your budget is cut for next year. If you go over budget, your budget is increased. So it's the exact opposite metric of the free market, which is why it's always a slide of resources from free market to government. In the government, you are paid more for doing things worse. And in the private sector, of course, it's quite the opposite, which is why whenever the private sector becomes more productive, resources just slide towards the government, right? Like, it's a minority of people in Canada who are supporting everyone on government paychecks and welfare. So that is, the AI is not going to do that much. And what it will, there will be companies that say, oh, you know, if you want to apply for a visa, we've got this AI interface that will do a lot of the paper. But on the back end, there's no particular incentive for efficiency in a government. In fact, it's quite the opposite. So, which is why it tends to be metastasize and eats up the private sector. Although I guess Trump and Elon Musk would like to change that in America in a couple of months. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Massively, deeply, and humbly appreciated. This, my birthday month of September 2024. And all those who donate at freedomain.com/donate will get a copy of the History of Philosophy series this month. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Bye.